Avenue Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey on the road again in San Francisco for just two games, and then on to Colorado. We'll talk about the San Francisco series here. Jay Posner, sports editor of the Union Tribune, back in San Diego. Jay, just a wow, just a basically a life-threatening emergency here. Just did the worst homestand ever. I hyperbolize, but Jay, the Padres are 33-33. Craig Stammen, let's see, Andy Green mess things up. Ian Kinsler's still here. Being somewhat sarcastic, but you know what? A lot left to be desired out of this homestand.
Yeah, I mean, obviously everyone was expecting better than 4-6. Gave away the one afternoon game against the Phillies. Stole a game, I would say, against the Nationals, so maybe that balanced out. Didn't play as well as people would hope. Ended on a bad note on Sunday when they got a great performance in a bullpen game up until the eighth inning, when one of the guys you would not expect to struggle in a bullpen game struggled beyond whatever struggle. Whatever beyond struggle is, that's what Craig Stammen did, allowing four straight home runs to tie a major league record. I don't even know what to say about all that. I mean, I think, you know, the blame is on Stammen. I mean, I think Andy Green got criticized in some circles, and I got criticized for defending him. But I'm not sure what a manager is supposed to do when a pitcher gives up four home runs and seven pitches. I said the other day, the only thing I could say is that maybe after the third one, they could have done some stalling. Balsley could have gone out, you know, then he could have come back to the dugout, and then Andy could have gone out. And maybe at that point they could have gotten Miguel Diaz ready. But we don't know how long it takes Miguel Diaz to get ready either. Uh-huh. I mean, maybe he needs another six pitches or something like that. There's only so much you can do. You know, people said, why didn't they make a mound visit? I don't know. Darren Balsley knows a lot more about Craig Stammen and pitching than, you know, the rest of us will ever – he'll forget more than the rest of us will ever know about pitching. And he obviously didn't think it was important to go out there. So I think, you know, if you're going to fault Darren Balsley, great, fault Darren Balsley. But I think – I've talked about this before. I think players – need to be blamed when players mess up. And this was a situation, this is Stammen's situation. You can't say he was put in a situation where he doesn't normally belong or anything like that. This is the situation he's on the team to succeed in. Most of the time he does. In this game, he didn't. To me, that's on Craig Stammen. And does he continue in this role? Yeah, I think he does, at least in the short term. And if he has another outing or two like this, then maybe you start thinking about dropping him into a different spot. So where are you on all this, Kevin?
Well, I think you make all valid points, and the questions about, hey, Andy or Balsley, you can ask those questions. We should. And then the answers are, Jay, basically what you said. I mean, it's not a video game. Craig Stammen's not always going to be perfect. You don't just get to, like, select reliever, and then that reliever's instantly coming in. There's a lot of communication that goes on. Doug Bockler, the bullpen coach down there, talking about how Stammen looked. You know, there obviously, or I'm assuming, there wasn't any warning of that. I wasn't there on Sunday. I have seen the pitches, some good ones, some bad ones. When he first came in, I thought Stammen was hurling, now quickly unraveled. But all those explanations, Jay, you're 100% correct. Playing it forward, they are going to go younger. Now, I fully expect, as you do, that Craig Stammen would be your high leverage, so your seventh inning, your more likely eighth inning guy, if that situation arises tonight as we take this before the start of the series in San Francisco Tuesday, that he would be your high leverage guy. Then again, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work again. Well, you know what? The plan is always moving forward. That is when Jose Castillo comes back. That is Trey Wingenter and what they were moving him toward before his shoulder injury and what they are moving him toward now. That could be Miguel Diaz. So, absolutely. They're going to be bringing guys up from the minors. Gerardo Reyes, as long as he keeps throwing strikes, he's, the future is youth in those spots. But Craig Stammen, there is no way that Andy Green could have done much more before the third home run. And I would say even after that, it would have taken, you know, an incredible stall job. And like I said, and I'll ask today, just out of curiosity, and Andy will know I wasn't there, and he won't give me too hard of a time about it. But, you know, so why not after the third pitch? It had to do with Miguel Diaz needing time. You are not going to, first of all, anticipate a fourth home run. Second of all, risk Miguel Diaz's health.
Right, and you're not going to get someone up after Stammen gives up one home run. I mean, that happens. Guys give up runs. And
he gave up three last year.
Right, right. So you go from there. You know, and one thing, looking back at the homestand, that's a bit of a concern is obviously the pitching, you know, was just not good enough. Gave up 9 runs to the Marlins, 9 runs to the Marlins, 9 runs to the Phillies, 7 runs to the Phillies. You know, even the games they won against Washington, they gave up 4 runs. They gave up 4 in a loss, gave up 5 in a loss. I mean, I just don't think they can, you know, there wasn't one game. The first game of the homestand, they beat Miami 5-2. They beat Philadelphia 8-2. Those are the only games where they, you know, gave up fewer than 4 runs. And they're going to need some better pitching than that because, you know, the offense just isn't there. And I don't know that there's any reason to expect that it's going to be there, other than you would think Manny Machado would hit better, and especially now going on the road. I mean, his home numbers are just not good at all, but he's been very good on the road. And they've been good on the road in terms of scoring runs, almost 4.5 a game on the road, and just 3.7 when they've been home. So, you know, we'll see. San Francisco's not exactly a hitter's park. Colorado obviously is. 6 games. And, you know, Kevin, we're entering a stretch now. The Padres have played 38 games at home and 28 on the road. That's obviously going to catch up to you, and it's going to start catching up now. 24 of the next 36 are on the road. The Padres are 15-13 on the road, so it's not like it's been a big problem area for them. And San Francisco throwing 2 young pitchers tonight, both of them with fewer than 30 innings of big league experience. Not tonight, but in this series. Tyler Beede over an 8 ERA in his 25 1/3 innings. Sean Anderson just came up last month, has a 4 ERA in 5 starts. So we'll see how things go. The Giants are a bad team. They're one of 3 teams with a worse run differential than the Padres, and it's way worse, minus 86. The Padres are in the minus 30 range. So, again, we always say, hey, chance for the Padres to win a couple games, but you can say that all you want, and who knows what's going to happen. I mean, I follow the Indians a little closer than most other teams, and you know they just won 2 out of 3 against the Yankees, but they can't beat the Royals this year. So it's just one of those things that I've given up trying to predict how these things are going to happen. We'll just see what happens. And the one thing about tonight, and you should speak on this, and there's a story online if people haven't already seen it by the time they hear this, should check it out before tonight's game. About Chris Paddock, and this is a big start for him. What can we expect from Paddock tonight, and what's in the story that people should have already read or should be looking up here?
Well, Chris Paddock's velocity is down a little bit. His command isn't as good, and his coaches would like to see him mix in the curve more and mix it in as a weapon, but also mix because they believe it can be. But also mix it in to get people off the changeup. When his changeup and his fastball, the command is there, the changeup's doing its thing, it's good enough to beat the Giants with him throwing like 3 curveballs. But when he faced the Yankees, the Dodgers, a veteran Phillies lineup, it was not. And they want Chris Paddock to be the guy that goes out and beats the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Phillies, anybody he faces. There's no reason to panic on Chris Paddock, but we're talking about 3 of his last 4 starts have not been good. ERA up over 5 on its way to 6 after being, 1.55 in his first 7 starts. This is a big one. He retired the first 10 Giants he faced. Doesn't mean he will tonight, but what we do know is the Giants are not the Yankees or the Phillies or the heck, they're probably not the Diamondbacks. So I think it's a big point. Now, it's not make or break, but it's this lull that should have been expected out of Chris Paddock. And when will he and how will he get out of it? I'm very excited to see this for different reasons than I've been excited for Paddock pitching performances in the past.
Right. And this is the lineup that you want to see when if you're, you know how there's teams you want to lineups you want to face. This is the lineup you want to face. The Giants are 14th or 15th in all the major hitting categories. Their OPS at home is actually below 600. So this is the kind of lineup where you would think Paddock would get it turned around and you would hope, because his next outing is going to be against the Brewers when the Padres come back here off this road trip. I would think he would pitch that first game on next Monday night when the Padres come home, and there you're talking about another good team and a good test. So this is a way, I don't think, Paddock doesn't seem to be the type that loses confidence, but this is the kind of confidence building outing that somebody could have.
Well, let's speak to that, Jay. Like, he doesn't seem like the kind to lose his confidence, except that everybody does. You know, Roger Clemens did, mm-hmm. I've heard story, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it happens, this whole, the idea of having the conviction to throw a pitch and then having the conviction to throw it any time in the major leagues. Having the confidence that you're awesome, having the confidence you're awesome against any batter. Those are two different things that even Chris Paddock is finding out. So,
right.
I think it's big. I wanted to speak to a couple things you said, and, you know, I don't know where they're going, but you talked about the pitching. And obviously, there was a big blow-up that Salmon was in the middle of, a couple days before his big blow-up. And you talked about the runs. I thought that if you were going to look for a positive out of the game on Sunday, it would be that, you know, Luis Perdomo went into the fourth, right?
I thought he was great. I mean, you got the Robbie Erlin there. And
has been good.
Yeah. And that's the kind of thing it seems like that they're going to have to do a little bit more of. I mean, Strom might be back by the weekend.
All indications, of course, I'll have a better idea today, but yes.
Right. You know, we'll see Paddock, we'll see Lucchesi. They've still got Quantrill and Lauer to go in at least the first couple games, I would think, in Colorado, and then we'll see from there. But yeah, we'll talk more about the Colorado series. I mean, somebody could be pitching great. I mean, it's interesting. Lucchesi's going to pitch in San Francisco, where the one time he pitched there last year was one of his worst outings. But when he faced the Giants earlier this year, it was one of his best outings. So who knows what we'll see tonight. And as I said, I've never been really much in the prediction game, but trying to do it on here has made me even less inclined to start trying to predict these things.
And then the last thing, Jay, that I think that you touched on, and I know that we've talked about it a lot, so I know you got a lot of good stuff on it, and I think I might have some interesting insight, is Manny Machado at Petco Park. And so, first, set the table. How bad has it been, and, you know, in comparison to, say, the road and all that?
No, it's been shockingly bad, if you really think about it. I mean, he's hitting .215. And his on base is only .296. He's only slugging .341. Those are his home numbers. And if you look, like his worst season, his worst full season when he was as a pro was 2017. He hit .259 that year, .310 on base, .471 slug. His numbers right now, .242, .327, and only slugging .403. But on the road, he's slugging .485. And his on base is his OPS is .853, which is even above his career number. So he has been everything that the Padres would have expected and wanted on the road. The problem has been he's not been anywhere close to that at home. But hey, they're going on the road for a week, and but I guess the question is, where is Machado's head in terms of Petco Park? We've seen it get in the head of other players. I wouldn't think it would get in anybody's head now because it's much more of a fair ballpark than it was in the days where we saw Phil Nevin glaring at Kevin Towers in the press box after numerous balls died out in right center field. But the ball carries better there now, although it's been fairly chilly for a lot of their games. But where do you think Machado is in terms of his approach at Petco and comparing it to the road?
I'm gonna play psychologist because that's part of my job, right? As a beat writer and all that. I'm not one, just in case you didn't know, but I play one on podcasts. So I'm going to go to the quote that Manny Machado gave after the grand slam that he hit against the Phillies. And what was that? The 8-2 victory. And he talked about Petco Park and his struggles there, or he was asked about his struggles, and he said, this is a fair ballpark, and went kind of gushed, a little bit bordering on over the top, and if you hit a ball well, but in there were a couple phrases, and I wish I'd, thought, I'm just not that smart, I'm just trying to play one on the podcast, to have the actual quote, but there was also an allusion to, yes, some balls do get caught up there. But real quick, Manny Machado said, but you hit it well, and they'll go out. And, I think that is similar to some things he said before, and it leads me to believe that Petco is a little bit in his head. Now, we haven't seen a whole bunch where, like, wow, man, he's probably really bummed because that would have been out at Camden Yards or wherever, and it wasn't here. We haven't seen a lot of those, but we also haven't seen a lot of opposite field. We've seen a lot of grounders. We have seen a lot of ground double plays, that's for sure. and so, like, there is a possibility that he's changed his approach a little bit. Look, I'm a pop psychologist only, and not a very good one probably. Actually, I'm very good at it. But Manny Machado is supremely confident, and a part of that confidence is, and he's acknowledged this to me, is just don't address this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that quote, discount it, except the parts where he talked about how Petco Park can be tough.
Right.
So that's my analysis, Jay.
Okay. No, that makes sense.
We're
2 months.
Don't lie.
Right, and you know the Padres have played 38 games at Petco. He didn't play in one, maybe two of those. So you know we're talking about not even half a season into a long-term contract. So it's a little early to start saying that you know Manny's never going to hit at Petco. I don't think anybody's there, but it's definitely an issue worth keeping an eye on to see if those numbers go up as the season goes on, because you know, nobody's looking for a 637 combined on base and slugging from Manny Machado. You know, those are the numbers where if Austin Hedges gets there, you say, hey, that's great. Austin Hedges is at 637. But if Manny Machado's there, then that's going to be a problem. So,
no, I'm just going to say, like, there is also the idea, and people in the organization are saying it now about Manny the same way they said about Eric Hosmer last year, that the idea of the first year and the savior of the franchise and all that stuff. I don't think that can be discounted. Again, I'm projecting, but you know, and so are other people, except those other people are around Manny Machado like every second.
Right.
And they, you know, they see no other reasons because he's working hard. He's doing a lot of the same things and they're, you know, they've seen it before that even the best, and that's why we talk about Chris Paddock's confidence, right? Even the best can feel the weight of pressure.
Right. One last thing, and I know you got to run, but quickly, Luis Urias, where do we stand? Where do we stand on that? Do we expect him again? Not to get into the prediction game, but what sort of feeling do you have about when we might see Luis Urias, and might it even be this week on the road trip?
Yes, and from multiple people, soon is all I can get. And I, you know, if I get into more detail than that, I'm giving away some things. You know, in terms of like, you know, where I'm getting certain things, but it's a, and not that anyone's giving me exactly when he's coming up, and I'm hiding it from y'all. That's not happening. But soon is when it is, and as there is about every decision in every organization, there's internal debate about this, and a part of that debate is it centers around the fact that someone's got to go, and that's Greg Garcia or Ian Kinsler. And you know, we don't have enough time to get into all the reasons that it would be okay for Ian Kinsler to go, and then there's some reasons that no, what he's brought to the team and the fact he has the third highest on-base percentage on the team since May 1st, and you know, the chemistry, blah blah, and the edge and all that stuff. And then you got super utility guy Greg Garcia, who what, 347 on base? I mean, you know, he's been everything you asked him to be, and he plays that role, whereas Ian Kinsler's 0 for 9 off the bench. So, you know, that's a part of it. But also a part of it is, if you saw Luis Urias when he came up this time, this year, and to a lesser extent, at the end of last year, boarding his hamstring, he struggled. And he struggled with the fastball, and he looked lost. And the Padres believe, and again, there's differing opinions, and that's how good organizations work, that he hasn't exactly got the timing down in AAA, despite the numbers. So they're going to bring him up soon, because guess what? He's their number two position prospect. He's 22 years old. They believe that, you know, they got to find out what they have, and they've got other guys behind him, and it's time. But there's still, you know, a lot of reasons, pro and con.
Right. Well, it's yet another thing that'll be interesting to keep an eye on, and we've got two quick games in San Francisco, and then you'll be off to Denver. So we will talk to you on Thursday from Colorado, and hopefully no snow. You never know there. I know it's been a weird weather time, so hopefully no snow, and enjoy San Francisco, and we'll talk to you and everyone else on Thursday.
Thanks, everybody.